Broadcasting from AnyUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up. It's September 12th, 2008, and you are listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I am very happy to be here today because we put out another issue.
Yes, we're
done. I'm tired, man. I stayed up till probably like 2:30 in the morning just looking at all the pages, proofing them. But it's another one under our belts, so we're that much more established.
And a pretty good one, if we can say.
I think so. A lot of good stuff in there. Not that we're going to talk about all the stuff that's in there, but a lot of good things this month for us. That trip really opened up our eyes to a lot of things, and just a lot of good stuff. I interviewed a world champion in Jerry Yang, and we saw a lot of interesting characters on our road trip, and really good stuff.
Yeah, and a great cover story on Bar Poker too, which is
it's just massive here.
It's a huge growth potential here.
Every day we find another bar league to say, hey, you want our magazine? So yeah, real good story on the bar league, and a local guy too, who was in one of those bar leagues, won his World Series seat, went out there and cashed.
Always like to see those chip in a chair kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And he wrote a first-person piece for us, too. So that was really interesting. Now I'm looking ahead to next month's issue. And next week, too. Next week, we got a big show, actually.
We got all kinds of news. And we're going to have a guest next week. Lee Jones is going to be on the show next week.
Lee Jones, the COO of Card Runners. Now, I guess, I don't know what the name's going to be, but Card Runners and Stocks Poker have merged.
That's right.
So we couldn't get, for the bad news, we couldn't get, what's his name on the show there?
Justin.
Brian Townsend.
Yes.
But for the good news, we have Lee Jones on the show. So listen, if you have any questions out there, please send them to us for him at podcast@anyupmagazine.com, because we know a lot of you use either Card Player, Card Runners or Stocks Poker. So really, just if you have something you want to know about what's going on with the merger, what's going on with the companies, what's going on with him? He's a fantastic poker player,
And I know a lot of our listeners too are interested in learning more about these online training sites too. And I think we probably haven't done as good a job as we probably can in explaining the relative value of these membership sites and what you get, the videos and instruction and things like that. And so it certainly sounds like the Card Players or Card Runners and Stocks Poker merger is bringing two together. In fact, in the magazine this month, we had an article on another site called Real Training, and I talked a little bit about how the market's kind of saturated and some of these mergers are going to have to happen. And
here it goes.
Kind of prophetic.
Yeah, I think that we're going to bring that up next week with him as well. And I don't want to get too much into the whole merger news, because we just told you basically what's happened. These two companies are going to merge together. And we're going to talk a lot about it next week, so I don't want to step on any of the toes of our questions.
We got big toes, though.
Yeah, but I mean, initially, each site... You should see my big toe. It looks like a thumb.
I don't really want to see your big toe. Thanks for the offer, though.
Cardrunners and StocksPoker.com, both the websites will be maintained separately as their own websites. So it's not going to be like one site, I guess. But I don't know. Eventually, they'll probably merge.
I think they're focusing on two different things, too, and trying to make a broader reach and probably ultimately more value for your money, I think. That's usually what happens in these mergers.
September 9th, which was this week, Cardrunners began releasing some instructional videos from the Stocks Poker library to their gold members. So you can see how they're going to start already doing the old synergy thing there.
Yep.
Also, a free 24-hour trial to Card Runners will be available until September 30th. Simply text Card Runners to 32075 on your cell phone and receive the entry code and instructions. So you can see that they're really trying to just integrate and expand with this move. We'll have plenty of more questions for Lee next week. And like I said, send them in to us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com, and we'll be sure to ask them.
And we also have a big tournament next week.
Oh, yeah, next week's a big week. Next week's a big week. Short-handed, six-handed, No Limit Hold'em Apes tournament.
Yep.
On Full Tilt Poker. Password is ANTEUP, all one word, $5 plus 50 cents. September 18th, Thursday night at 9 o'clock. I'm not going to make any predictions this time because I'm still staring at the screen wondering how I went out 27th last month. So I'm not making any predictions. You've been playing a lot of poker, so you might do well in it.
Yeah, my one prediction is that I'm hoping that I still have enough money left in my Full Tilt account to actually be able to buy into Apes by next week, because it's been an interesting week. I don't know if you saw the headline in today's paper, Chris, but we no longer can refer to bubblegum as bubblegum. It can only be called gum, because Scott Long has all the bubbles in the world already. There are no more bubbles left. to be shared with gum or wrap or anything else. That
so are you saying that when I have a stressful day, I can't go in and have a bubble bath anymore? Can I only have a bath?
No, just a bath. Just a bath. Because
you have all the bubbles?
I have ruined it by having all the bubbles in the world. It has been perhaps the most frustrating week of poker in my entire poker career.
So are you saying that when I ship stuff off to my relatives, I can only put it in wrap?
Just
I can't
wrap.
So like saran wrap, not just bubble wrap?
Just wrap
so everything's going to be broken when it gets there because nothing will be there but to protect it because you've taken all the bubbles?
Yeah. I checked with IMDb and already John Travolta's movie is called Boy. No longer Bubble Boy, just Boy.
Just Boy.
Yep.
It's the boy in the... That's what it's... The boy in the... That was the name of the movie. Boy in the Bubble.
And when I say bubble, I didn't have the technical bubble a lot of times, but I was so close to the money that I was popping the bubble wrap and ended all of them. I finally broke through and cashed in the Omaha 8 multi-table towards the end of the week and kind of got over the hump. And then the next day, bubbled three more times. So, but no, I had two big multi tables, like 200 players, and I got down to one was a 18 players cash, and I finished 20th. And another one where I finished 22nd or so, like that. Right after that, a bunch of sit and goes where I went out fourth. It's just frustrating,
man.
But and then of course, then last night I went out to the Silks card room here in Tampa and played in their Omaha 8 tournament and made the final table. Which sounds more impressive than it is because there are only 36 players, but still.
Still made the final table.
Still final table. And, of course, went out 10th, so that's not quite a bubble, but it's bubble-icious.
Bubble-icious.
But I gotta tell you, here is the best part of the week.
Okay.
I have, for the first time in my life, fallen asleep during an online tournament.
Oh, my God. I'm working you too hard, I think.
That might be. Well, you know what happened is the wife's out of town, and you know when she's out of town, my whole schedule gets thrown off.
Yeah,
because I'm on a schedule. You know, she gets home like at 11 at night, and we talk about our days, and then we watch a little TV, and then I go to bed, and when she's not coming home, I don't know when to talk about my day and watch TV and go to bed. So I fill that time with online poker, and I was playing a bunch of tournaments the other night and talking to our good friend Lee Childs for a while too, and chatting, and I was all amped up and. Yeah, I had a few beers. And then I decided to end one more tournament. I'm like, can I get this last Omaha High pot limit rebuy tournament? Might as well. It's only $3, right?
Yeah.
And of course, $3 turned into 12 because I had a rebuy and add-on and stuff. And then I woke up at 5 in the morning and looked at the screen, and apparently I finished 21st, almost a bubble. The tournament was still going on, but it had the little screen that said, you finished 21st. I don't know when I fell asleep.
Oh, my God.
But I did pretty darn well for snoozing on the couch.
So really, though, what we've learned here is that whether you're awake or whether you're asleep, you pretty much play the same. I'm thinking that's what we just found out. Because you pretty much went out right around where you normally would have gone out in that tournament anyway. So really, you don't need to pay attention. Just, you know. Put in your money and go to sleep.
Yeah, I need to work on my sleeping poker skills because if I can guarantee that I'm going to cash, I'll just register a bunch of tournaments and take an Ambien and be done. Wake up next morning rich. All right, so I had one philosophical question that came up during my play this week.
You came up with the question or someone else came up with it?
I came up with it, and maybe perhaps it's not philosophical, but I would like to see what the nation thinks, and maybe even you since you're here, and you know, that can actually react.
I'll give it a shot.
Right now.
Give it a shot.
All right, part of my mild week of poker, I call it, I went out to Silks. Actually, I went to Silks a lot this week, but yeah. I went out a couple nights ago and did the dreaded 1-2 no-limit game, and you know that I hate playing no-limit cash games, but you know, I want to learn.
You want to get better.
I'm going to put that 100 out there and play tight and then, you know, look for good hands. And and eventually, of course, got stacked. Went home with no money in my pocket. But here's my philosophical question.
Okay.
I had a hand where I had pocket aces. Pretty good hand, usually.
You'd like to think.
Yeah. I'm not describing these hands to have hand analysis here, so... All listeners don't need to get your pen and paper out and scribble down and then tell me how much of a donk I am for playing pocket aces.
No, they can. Go ahead. Do it. Please do. Please do. We want as many letters as possible.
What I'm setting this up for a philosophical discussion. All right? It's not all a right. hand of the week discussion here.
All right.
But I had pocket aces. For some odd reason, I only raised the 6. Mm-hmm. I got 47 collars. Collars coming in from, you know, Tampa Greyhound and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Flop came King Queen 7 or something, and the big blind fired a big bet out, and I folded. which, you know, we could debate forever whether I should have or not. But here's the point. I decided I didn't want to risk my whole stack on the hand where I just had an overpair. I want to wait for a better spot.
Uh-huh.
So two orbits later, I get into a hand. I have ace-queen on the button. There's a live straddle and, again, a gazillion callers. I decide just to call and see what the flop came. I know, yes, I could have raised, blah, blah, blah. Not a hand analysis, all right?
Okay.
And the flop came ace-queen 10.
Sweet.
So top two, and it was checked around to me on the button. So, of course, I fire out a bet, and I want to stave off those straight draws. And then, of course, some guy goes over the top on me. At that point, I was kind of pot committed, so I decided to just call, even though I figured he had King Jack, and of course, he did turn over King Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, I went home broke.
Right.
All right, so here's my philosophical question. Would you have felt better had you gone all in with those aces two orbits before and got stacked, and then not had this second hand where you think about that?
Okay,
you know, of course, you never know what would happen with the first hand. And of course, if I went all in on the first hand and I won, then I probably wouldn't have been in the situation where I was committed on the second hand. So I guess I'm wondering, do you ever think about that when you go through your hands at the end of the night and think how things could have turned out differently? And does it make it feel better that I went out with a hand where I flopped top two than I would have been if I went out with a hand where I just had an overpair?
I think that philosophically, you would feel better knowing that you had the best hand going into the hand. So with the aces, had you raised more? See, it's hard to be philosophical without being analytical because you still have to think about how you played it. I would know for a fact that before the flop, I had the best hand.
That is correct.
No one could have a better hand. So I would feel better philosophically. I would feel I have the best hand. I can be at peace with whatever happens here if I make the move correctly. Like you said, you don't want to get analytical, so I'm not going to say you should have raised more than six. Because, you know, I played recently live at a card room around here, and I had pocket aces and raised to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guys were raising to 10 and getting called by deuce 7 suited, and another guy called me with like 3-5 and flopped 2 pair when it came 9-3-5, and I got it all in and lost, and it didn't make me feel any better. I knew I had the best hand. I knew that he was going to try to stack me, and I took a chance. Felt like I was pot committed. He didn't have enough chips to get me off my overpair. So philosophically, I think I would feel better knowing that I got my money in with the best hand pre-flop rather than waiting for a hand to flop and no, I don't have the nuts and now I'm getting my money in. I think you played the ace-queen hand poorly, but from a philosophical standpoint, once you saw that flop, the odds of someone flopping a straight versus you flopping those top two pairs, I mean, it's pretty rare that that guy's going to make Broadway, and you still have outs.
Yes.
So I think I would rather have the ace's hand and raise more and then be comfortable with, hey, I did my job and if I can get away from the hand, I get away from it. I think getting away from the hand might have been smart. You might have had the worst hand at that point. Although, I don't know what a guy would be betting there that much if he had top two. Philosophically, I'd rather have aces and just play it correctly, and then I'd feel better about how I played. The way you played the ace-queen hand, I definitely would have raised, or, you know, in preflop. Or, you know, but then again, you know, we don't want to get into that. So, yeah, philosophically, I'd rather have know that I have the nuts before the flop than not have the nuts after the flop and lose my stack. But either way, I think you're going to lose your stack, or at least get your stack all in both those hands. So it really makes no difference. I'm surprised you got away from the other hand, though. I really am, especially when it was a blind guy pushing in. You know, I mean, if he called a raise, he might have had, like, king something. You know, he might have had king jack. You know, who knows what he had there. He could have had a draw. He could have had jack 10. You know what I mean? He could have had anything. So from that standpoint.
Well, there are two clubs on that board, too. So he could have
had he could have had a draw, which you want him to have a draw on that spot. You want to call him. Philosophically, I think I would rather choose the ace way of going out, ace's way of going out, than the ace queen. But even so, top two, you can't get away from your hand. So it's not like you're going to get away from that hand. You know what I mean? Especially because you said you're committed anyway. So either way, I think you can sleep. Obviously, you can sleep because you fell asleep with the
that
terminal
was the same night.
The same night. So clearly, it didn't weigh on your conscience too heavily. So that's pretty good.
All right. Well, we also had a reader question a couple weeks ago that we never got to, and I would throw out to. He wrote in saying that he had a sat down on a 1-2 no limit table at a local casino, and he had three good aggressive players to his left.
Mm-hmm. Brutal.
And yeah, and he wanted some advice on how to deal with that. And my first advice was table change.
Yeah, he said you can't, though.
And then, of course, he wrote back saying, hey, that was the only table, so you're stuck there. I don't know.
you know,
I guess you could decide to go to the buffet and get some au jus or something and wait for those people to leave.
Enter a tournament, maybe? No, no, really. I think that
there's a poker tech table.
If you want to stay there and you don't want to leave and you want to play poker, you just, you know, they always tell you that. You know how every time we talk about something in poker, it's always, it depends is the answer? Well, everything's here. When you sit down at that table, everything depends. You have to adjust to the table that you're at. I feel like at this table, if I have three guys who are really aggressive and they're on my left and I am not the quality of player that can jump right in and be the fourth aggressive player at the table, or I'll play these guys because they're better than me, then I'm going to play tight. I mean, you're just going to play tight and then limp is what I would do. I would play tight and limp with the aces like you had, and these guys are real aggressive, and then when it gets back to me, come over the top and get my money in good.
But exactly. So what you're saying, though, is you pretty much got to wait for good hands then.
Yeah, I think you got to be
patient.
It's
not a matter
patient.
Of limping, because I think he was limping, and then these players were raising a lot, so there's no way of seeing a cheap flop.
Well,
so.
I think that you missed my point.
I'm sure I did.
I said if you're gonna play tight and then limp with big hands, let these aggressive guys on your left, because they act after you, do the betting for you, and then when it comes back to you, you come over the top. You know, or you call, smooth call, and trap them. It's the only thing you can do, because normally you want these guys on your right. So if they're on your left, really you need to tighten up and hope that, you know, you pick up a big hand, just limp, let them do their little, hey, I'm going to raise, re-raise, and all that crap. When it gets back to you, then you either smooth call or bring the hammer down and take down a few pots.
Let me ask you this. If they're aggressive, though, wouldn't your raise encourage them to raise more? Therefore, be a better solution than limping and letting them...
Well,
to trap them?
I guess it would depend on, I'm not sitting at the table with them right now, but generally, if they're aggressive and they're going to raise, and he was saying, like you said, that he did limp and people were raising him out of the pot, then you just keep doing that. You limp and let them do your betting, especially if you've got three aggressive guys. So you know someone's going to raise on your left.
Yeah.
If you raise and you've been tight, if you're following this philosophy and you raise, they're going to know that you've got a big hand because you've been limping all along. And now you're raising, you must have a hand. They may not tangle with you. Who knows?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just thinking that if you know these guys on your left are real aggressive, one of the three, you got a 33% chance that one of them is going to raise. You got a 1 in 3 chance. So, you know, I think I would definitely just limp with a monster, let them raise, and then when it gets back to you, re-raise. Or call if you know you're going to be heads up with them, and then just, you know, slow play it. So, I don't know. That's my philosophy. I wouldn't mind raising if I knew that they were that way. Like, if I had raised earlier and they came over the top of me, then I know they didn't give me respect. Then I might do that. But again, it's the depends answer. You have to know what they're going to do. From what this one line written on this piece of paper from you tells me is that he has three aggressive players on his left. So those three aggressive players tend to just raise and raise all the time. So I'm going to just limp and let them raise and do my betting for me. That's what I would do. Other than that, I would just leave. You know, there's no shame in walking away. You know?
Absolutely not. And I don't think our reader, felt any shame in that. It's just kind of that thing where you're jonesing for a game. I mean, Fast and I do this in Vegas all the time. You know, we gear up for 3 or 4 months playing in the strip and get out there and you want to play cards. And but when you get out there, then you're going to play even though you know it's not the optimal time to play.
Yeah, and you always see the articles too in the magazines that say look for a better game, you know, or look for a better table, whatever. And sometimes you just don't have that luxury. And so in this case, if he didn't have that luxury, then that's what I would do. I'd make my bankroll last as long as I could by playing tight and trying to pick up tendencies on the other players and on them as well. And then whatever I got to do to make my money, well, I'll do. And generally in that situation, you want to play tight and adjust. But speaking of somebody who's going to have to do a lot of adjusting, Michael Phelps is going to have to do a lot of adjusting from swimming to swimming with sharks. Apparently, he's going to be joining Doyle's room.
Well, yeah, lots of rumors out there. Nothing official yet, but apparently the stories that we've been reading are pretty funny that he was out in Vegas. He had that real sweet Palms suite.
Yeah.
Sweet. You know, like 25,000 square feet with a basketball court and stuff, and had the old man and the kid over and talked some poker. They brought some Super System books and making a big push to get him on Team Doyle's room.
I think they will, too. I think they'll get him. That's awesome. And you know what, too? I think we're going to try our best to get him on the show. That would be so cool to have Michael Phelps on the show. If that happens, man, we're going to have to, like, you know, make announcements on the news and stuff.
Yeah, let me ask you this. If we get him on the show, too, are you going to challenge him? You know, like Chad, Ocho, Cinco, Johnson, and say that, yeah, you can outswim him and stuff? Because that would be cool.
Yeah,
I'll challenge him.
I'll challenge him to a belly flop contest, maybe. But that's about, or who can sink to the bottom the fastest. I think I could sink faster than he can, because I'm sure I weigh more than he does.
Well, it depends whether he's just chopped down his 97th cheeseburger of the day. In his belly there.
What is it, like 13,000 calories a day? Oh, the other thing, too, is fat floats. So maybe I won't challenge him to that, because I think that he may sink faster than me. I don't know. But, you know, I would like to have some fun with him on the show, you know, talking about, you know, the water is warm and come on in and that kind of thing. Just see what see how he reacts to that, you know. But he's a great kid. You know, you see his interviews and you know, you watch him on TV. He's got that Rosetta Stone commercial where he does it under a minute and he's timing the dog.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. So he's obviously got a personality. So I'm looking forward to seeing if he does join the poker world through Doyle's room and then comes on the show. It'd be great. Great interview. We'd love to get him. We'll see. Stay tuned.
We'll see. All right, Chris, we got an election coming up pretty soon. And
We do?
We do. Yeah, you might want to get your absentee ballot or something so you don't forget. Wow. Or you could vote early like I did this time. That was kind of cool.
You voted early?
Yeah, because we the primary was when we were on our trip.
Oh, yeah.
And it's too late to get absentee, so I went down there and voted early. Got my little sticker, like, you know, 3 days beforehand.
It's weird.
Kind of weird. You can't walk around town with the, I voted today.
That is weird.
Unless it's Chicago, which, you know, you can wear that sticker any day because, you know, you vote multiple times.
And so you get multiple stickers.
But Duplicate Poker has done a survey of 1,639 U.S. poker players.
Did they do two surveys of 1,600?
Ooh, that's an interesting point. I do not know.
Because it's duplicate.
Well, maybe they're going to do another one later.
Ah, there you go.
Maybe they're going to duplicate their action later.
And they have to get the exact same.
The exact
1,639
same.
People.
That'd be great. Then that would be the winning surveyor. The one who gets the actual number closer to the other one. See? We should do some marketing for some people.
I think so. Maybe for ourselves.
But the poker players that they surveyed have said that they're going to vote for Barack Obama 2-1 over John McCain. 1,043 for Obama and 596 for McCain. So
it should be way more than that.
The early results show.
It should be way more than that. It should be like 8-1.
8-1? Really?
It should be 10-1.
Yeah, Obama hasn't come out to say anything about poker yet, so we just know he likes to play. But we all know it's going to translate into policy.
Well, we know, but we want to change.
Yeah, it doesn't mean
change
anything.
Change would be Barack Obama. McCain is just Bush, you know, part three. So I'm just saying, I'm not putting out my political views or anything, but I'm saying as a poker player who is not happy with the UEGIEA, whatever that is, you would think that it's going to be status quo if the same party is in office for the next 4 to 8 years. You would think poker players would want Obama to win. And I'm not saying that poker players are conservative or liberal. I'm just saying, as far as what you want to do with your poker career and your poker hobby, you would think you'd want Obama in office to make a change or try to make a change, whereas you know McCain won't. And also, McCain recently is writing up some sort of thing where he wants to try to stop online poker. So, I mean, clearly this guy is not for online poker and for poker in general. So it is shocking to me that it's only 2-1, believe it or not.
Yeah, but, you know, it only takes one more vote than the other one.
That's true.
Well,
that's true.
Actually, one more electoral vote.
That's true. One more electoral vote.
Yeah, because it's not like this country could ever have a person win the popular vote but not be elected.
That would never happen.
That would never happen in this country.
But it is shocking to me that it's only that. I thought it'd be much more than that. I thought it would be like Mondale versus Reagan. You know? But whatever.
All right, so to TV. I know you love your TV.
I am the TiVo poker junkie.
And you might have just enough room on your TiVo for these next two shows that are coming out, if they actually come out. You know, these are announcements, so we never know until they're actually out.
Uh-huh.
But High Stakes regular and Deuces Crack coach Jay Kranz is planning a new show called House of Cards.
How you ingenious. That is so unique.
Yeah, it's a creative title. and I'm guessing it has to do with people living in a house, because that would be funny.
Yeah, and that's how you play online, in your house.
Very good.
He's going to be following online players, apparently.
Very good, yes. So he's going to chronicle the lives of a group of top-flight online poker players.
Very cool.
They're all close friends who met on the internet, and they're considered the best players in the world.
Who are they? Did they say?
I did not list them.
You didn't do your research, so no strike against
no,
you.
No, I didn't, yeah. but yeah, so we're going to hear their stories and vicariously experience a dream life through their eyes.
Wow.
Doing the best that high-end Las Vegas luxury has to offer.
I will definitely watch that show if it's out, though. I mean, because first of all, like I said, I love to watch poker on TV. But really, just to see, you know, the random card generator affect these guys. You know, and just, no, I mean, really, to see the lifestyle that the, and most, and I know they're all going to be like 22, 21.
Oh, yeah, they're all
going to
be
kids. They're all going to be really young, and it should be interesting to see what their lifestyles are like, you know. And a lot of them, up to this point, probably have they've avoided the limelight like Brian Townsend, and now all of a sudden, boom, they're going to be thrust upon it, and we're going to know who they are and what their sign on is, unless they blur it on the screen. But
I'm sure they won't.
I'm sure they'll announce it, though.
And they're going to want people to railbird them until they decide that they can't handle the limits that they're playing, and they have to go down, and then they're going to change the names. And
I would definitely watch that show if it was I would get a season pass.
Now, this parttimepoker.com article that we had says it's basically Entourage. Instead of poker, so it's Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
Without Jeremy Piven. Just insert an online poker player. That's essentially what it's going
to
be.
But this other one that we're going to talk about, I can't watch anyway. It's supposed to be just like in England or whatever.
Yeah, but you know, the internet Twitch has TV. A big reach, so people will probably LimeWire and find other ways
YouTube.
Hack into it. So
PokerTube.
PokerTube, yeah, there we go. But David Devilfish Oliad has a show coming out actually, it's entitled, which is incorrect. It should just be titled.
Just be titled. Not entitled.
Yeah, you're not entitled to anything.
We just say called.
Yeah.
And it's even shorter.
Yeah, even better. Yeah.
Show's called. There you go.
It's going to be a five-part series on ITV Wales, apparently some kind of network over in the across the pond, called How to Become a Poker Millionaire. And over the course of the series, Elliot's going to train four losing players, so I qualify.
I'm on the next flight over. Get me on the Concorde.
One of them will be eliminated every episode, becoming a double loser then.
Two-time loser.
Probably jumping off the London Bridge.
London Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is in, like, Arizona
in
now, right?
Arizona. Yeah. They moved it. And the Concorde is grounded, too. Don't send me emails. I know the Concorde doesn't fly anymore. Just give me a break. I was being funny.
So the last of these losers, who's not really a loser anymore because he actually won, he beat out the other losers to not be a loser anymore.
He's graduated.
Will win a seat in the 2009 World Series of Pokemon event.
Now, wait a minute. It says how to be a poker millionaire and all you get is a $10,000 seat. That's how to become a poker thousandaire. And even that's not really a thousandaire.
You know, a better title would be
dollar-aire.
Watch Devilfish Make Me Cry. Because you know he's going to be brutal.
He's
going to
be like that chef guy, chef on
exactly.
Fox. He's going to be, like, yelling at him. He's brutal to that
I was
going
to say, he's brutal to probably the people he loves the most. I mean, can you imagine four losing players? Oh, my gosh.
Man. Oh, man.
Talk about train wreck watching.
Bing, bing, bing. He really is brutal, man. I mean, he's like Phil Hellmuth with a better vocabulary. I mean, you know what I mean? He's really bad. I don't know. Last time I saw him on TV, he didn't have any class at all. So, and now he's got this whole, like, I'm going to dress like a 25-year-old gangster, even though I'm in my 50s or 60s. And it makes me uncomfortable.
He always had kind of that look because he had the, you know, the bling.
He had
on
the
his...
bling, but he always wore a nice suit. Now he's wearing, like, you know, like
I've
the dirty jeans and the hoodie and the hair combed down. And I don't get the look, man.
You know, that's a funny thing. That
dress your age.
I've always thought that people that dressed up for poker tournaments were kind of, I wouldn't do it, but I thought it was kind of classy that people could actually.
I thought it was cool.
Do a long tournament and be.
Marcel Lusk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you're right. And once you establish that look.
You don't go back to being a gangster.
Then there's nowhere to go but down. Exactly. You can't just show up in your tracksuit with Annie up on it or something and get respect anymore. So maybe you need to start off being a slob and then you gain more respect.
Hence my attire.
Ah, exactly. Yes.
See, I'm wearing jeans today. I'm stepping up. I'm working my way up.
You're moving up.
I'll be wearing the Armani suits sometime around 2020.
Get some product in your hair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Anyway, if I do get to see that show, I'd be interested in seeing how he just absolutely humiliates these people into becoming better poker players. I'll have to keep an eye out for it on YouTube or PokerTube. So
we've had a lot of weird weather lately, Chris. Florida has been dancing between the very hard horizontal raindrops. We've been lucky to kind of miss a lot of these hurricanes that have been just whizzing around the...
It's pretty remarkable, especially the Tampa Bay area, which is supposed to get hit by both of them. Or at least definitely one of them. And for some reason, it's like we've got this huge shield, you know? Like, Patrick, the guy from Star Trek's like, put up shields.
I thought you were going to say Patrick Griffin from Family Guy.
Yeah. Oh, Patrick Griffin? You mean Peter Griffin. You don't watch the show, do you?
Yeah, that's right. No, Patrick's his brother.
No.
You're sure?
Yeah, no.
You're not going to let me try to get out of this by...
Patrick Warburton does the voice of his neighbor, if you want to go that way. But...
He's a putty.
Yeah, no, he was putty on Seinfeld, but...
Yeah, see, all right, so I got something right there.
Family Guy.
Ah, yes.
And my wife hates it that I watch Family Guy. She says it's probably going to be the reason we get divorced.
Everyone hates that guys watch Family Guy.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
But my wife still watches. She hates it, but she still watches.
And I like fast forward. like through a lot of stuff. Like when he's going,
you can't fast forward through the chicken fights, though.
No, the chicken fights you have to watch.
Exactly.
Although yes, I have turned the volume down because I watch it late at night, you know. But let's not get off too far off tangent.
Right?
Let's get back to the weather here, which is always about poker.
All right. Anyhow, an article on 9/11, gambling911.com said that, and this is probably no surprise, but online poker traffic spikes during inclement weather.
Yeah, there's no shock there.
Assuming that you still have an internet connection, yes, and electricity and all that kind of goodies,
right,
and stuff.
But you're not going to leave the house to play poker when you know Ike is bearing down on you. So, and actually, we have a story this month in our issue about the High Heels Poker Tour over at the Isle in Pompano Beach. They usually get a decent turnout over there, but they only had 40 women show up because they weren't sure where Ike was going to go. 40 is still a pretty decent turnout, you know, for an all ladies tournament, but that was the effect right there. They didn't know where the hurricane was going to be.
Yep.
So they were either, you know, bearing down and whatever at their house, or they were taking off and going to Atlanta. So either way, you can see why weather affects poker players. I don't know. What would you do if the hurricane was coming our way? You'd play online, right? Well, you wouldn't go to the Silks.
Yeah, I'd be tapping that laptop right into the generator.
That's right.
Telling the wife, sorry, no AC. I got to make another bubble with this. But the article said that snowstorms actually are the weather conditions that usually boost internet play, because then you're all, you know, you're stuck in the house. You can't leave even if you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at least with a hurricane, you can.
Yeah.
You know, be Anderson Cooper crazy and
Anderson Cooper
try to get swept down the road, you know, on TV and stuff. Snowstorm, you're stuck.
Yeah.
Can't even open the door.
Can't even open the door because the snow is just holding it shut, frozen.
The last part I thought was interesting, too, that it said that when Hurricane Katrina, you know, 3 years ago came through, first made landfall in Miami Beach, the internet was accessible first only by cable, and then that went out, but DSL managed to hold up through the whole storm.
Ooh, that's a good selling point. It should, you know, put that during on one of the poker shows. World Poker Tours on TV, and they're like, hey, DSL made it through Katrina. If you have cable, make a switch. That's pretty smart. I'm telling you, man. We should do the marketing thing, man. I'm telling you.
We got two good ideas here.
At least two. We should be rich.
We'll start
off these
the Annie Up agency.
AUA.
AUA.
All right, let's listen to our hotline. Nothing there. Where did those crickets come from? You know,
Did the crickets send an address? Because
we got to send them some cards so they could play some cards.
Yeah, in their little cricket nests.
Cricket nests. No, what happened was we got a bunch of clips, but you know, none of them really were something we wanted to put on the show.
Yeah, this isn't a gimme. You know, when you call the hotline at 813-448-1120, not only do you have to get your message down in less than a minute, it's got to be a good message.
Yeah, I mean, we're not just going to, you know.
Get his call up and say, hey, give me some cards. It's not going to make the... As we're evidence today, we're not desperate enough to put crap on.
We are not that desperate. Although the whole weather topic.
It did take us a while to find the crickets, though.
I had to get a bunch of them, put them in a Hellman's mayonnaise jar.
Exactly, yeah.
Shake it up, and then put the microphone in there to make that noise.
Yeah, and then pop the little holes in there so they didn't die. Yeah, so they can get some air.
I forgot to do that. Uh-oh. I'm going to go home with some dead crickets.
All right, lunch.
We'll put them in chocolate.
I'll bring the chocolate, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, but once again, 813-448-1120. We'll get some good calls, and we'll get some good stuff from...
We'll try to get you some stuff from DB Dealer. Yeah.
Greetings. This is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another... 1 minute mystery. The case of the fiery furnace. It's deep into a large field multi-table tournament, and I'm 245th out of 290. 9K is average, and I just misplayed 7-7 out of the big blind and have 5,300 left. My M is 12, my Q is 0.6, and the blinds are just now going up to 200-400 with a 50 ante.
There's no need to rush, sir.
Two hands after the 7-7 debacle, I ante my 50, I watch the under the gun call the 400, and the under the gun plus 1 limp as well. Now it folds around to me at the button, and this time I look down at 9-9. I know I should worry about an under the gun limper normally, But I still raise here as these two have been playing weak, not tricky. I pop it up to 2K, figuring to win the pot right here. Heads up, worst case. Surely they can't both call.
You know, I'll let that go, sir. I'm no good at jokes.
But when it comes back around and the blinds fold, the under the gun calls, and then the under the gun plus one shoves for 8,500 and has me covered. Sound familiar? Are we willing to call for all our chips in this spot?
Okay, this week I'm going to totally avoid the title of the show, or the title of the episode.
Well, that's good.
I'm not even going to mention that fiery furnace, hot, you know. I'm not going to even talk about that. I'm just going to talk about the hand, all right?
All right, now let me ask you this, because I'm usually the good cop in our good cop, bad cop routine. People know that, right?
Right.
So how far do you think I can push Columbo here and have him still be willing to do this great segment for our show?
Well, he's a little under the weather this week. You can hear it in his voice. So he's a little weak right now. So I wouldn't push him too hard. He might.
All collapse. Right. Well, maybe I'll say my vitrolicness on his play for next week.
Okay. So, Mr. I can't play No Limit Hold'em, going to bash this
cash
guy.
Cash games, tournaments. I'm a $5 plus 50 pro.
Well, then tell me your impression.
I don't know why he thought the min raise with 9-9 was going to get people to fold and take the pot down. Are you kidding me? An under the gun, an under gun plus one, and raising it 2x?
Well, he didn't raise it 2x. I don't think he paid attention carefully.
What?
The blinds were 2 and 4, and he made it 2,000. That's 5x. I don't think he listened carefully. He made it 2,000 to go. Yeah. So this is why you can't be mad at Columbo, because you didn't listen carefully enough. He made it 2,000 to go. Maybe I should play the crickets right now. It's 200, 400 blinds. It just went up with a $50 ante, and he made it 2,000 to go, and he had about 3,300 left. So that's why he's asking, should he fold and be short stacked with 3,000, or should he call and hope that he's racing, or maybe even at best better than racing? So, with that news, as you're still stunned, I will open it up to the Ante Up Nation, see what their reaction is. I personally think that we're ahead here, because if one guy limped and then the other guy limped behind him, the under the gun plus one can't have a good hand here. He must have something like, I don't know, two paints or ace rag or something. Because why would this guy not have raised earlier? He has a limp before him, and you might want to worry about the under the gun limp. But I doubt it. This isn't the World Poker Tour. You know what I mean? So I think we're ahead of both of these guys, and we'll see what happens. But Scott's still stunned. He didn't min raise.
That changes the complexion of the hand.
Yeah, it changes it a lot. He made it 2 grand, and he has pocket nines, and he's hoping to take it down there, or at least get a heads up.
That probably could have taken it down, yes. Yeah.
But now he's three-handed, so...
he's transfixed by the music.
I think he should shove. I think we're ahead, and he should shove. So that's what I'm thinking.
But right, well, I guess I'm going to have to wait a week, and I'm going to have to listen to it closer next week before I can...
I'm not playing it again. We don't have enough time. Do you get enough? Poker, that is. Get in more playing time by buying her a gift card from Red Bamboo MediSpa in Northwood Plaza, Clearwater. Call 727-726-6100 or visit redbamboomedispa.com. The winning cards are gift cards from Red Bamboo MediSpa.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Well, if you're fortunate enough to live in the Florida area, and you can visit one of your local card rooms to pick up our October issue, because I wrote a review of Daniel Negreanu's long-awaited Power Hold'em Strategy book, and it was a good read. I have to admit, I read every word of this
every
book.
Every single word.
I really did.
Even the glossary?
Even the glossary.
The 12-page glossary?
Well, the only thing I didn't read was the poker terms, which was like 30 pages of it.
We caught you in the lie already.
But I mean, I read every word of the actual instructional stuff. And, you know, of course, you'll be able to see it on our flippy book online at antiupmagazine.com. which we love that flippy book.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But if you you know, if you have a chance to read it, you know, my review is in there all in detail. But we're gonna talk a little bit about it today. We were gonna have Daniel on the show,
but then we decided it'd just be better to talk to you about it.
Yeah, because I know more about his book than he does. I
mean, we don't need Daniel Negreanu to tell us about his book.
He's gonna talk about tens and make fun of you.
Exactly.
But no, he's in Barcelona, so we didn't even try to bother the guy.
Yeah, because you can imagine what that international call is gonna cost us.
Yeah, we can't do that. So, it was a good, very good read. I have to admit, his portion of the book is the best part, and really, that's what you're paying the money for. Because the other stuff, although it's well written and explores a lot of different ways to play Hold'em, like online and tournament, really, Dan Negreanu's small ball strategy is why you're buying this book, and it was pretty damn good.
All right, so again, it's Power Hold'em Strategy, $34.95, 520 pages, though you can skip 30.
Yeah, you can skip at least 30, and Cardoza Publishing. And it was definitely a good read.
He's got a couple contributors. You say it's almost essentially Super System 3.
Well, what I say is that if you looked at the book, you would think it's Super System 3 from afar, because it's published by the same company. The book looks very similar.
Yeah,
it's got
the same
golden font on the back and the black on the back. Big, thick, same kind of cover. And it's written by, six pros.
Yeah, he's got including Mike Caro.
No, Mike Caro didn't write anything in this book.
He should have.
He should have, though. But no, but Todd Brunson wrote a chapter, which I was really looking forward to, but I was disappointed because he says in the book that, he didn't have a lot of room to really get into the deeper thoughts that he has about what he was writing about, which was how to play high-stakes cash games.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there's some things in there, too, that he brings up stuff like, don't bluff a calling station. And it's like, well, if you're picking up this book to read about high-stakes cash games, playing for thousands and thousands of dollars, you know that already. So there's a lot of basic things in there.
Depends on how rich and idiot you are.
Yeah, but I mean,
but really, you made a couple good points about that. We can talk about that a little bit, too, that... aren't we past the point where we need a glossary of terms and that kind of stuff in a big book like this?
Especially this book.
And you made the point, too, that perhaps maybe some stuff might have been cut out. That's a pretty big book, 520 pages to begin with.
Right.
And if that was the case, if you take out the 30 pages of glossary, it could be 30 pages of good golden poker knowledge.
From Brunson or from Negreanu or whoever. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of stuff. And the other thing, too, that I talked about was there is like 12 pages of graphic hands. They show, these hands that trap hands and stuff like that. But they had already put that in a nice little chart on the first page. And then they proceeded to spend 12 more pages showing what the hands look like that they described perfectly well in letter form in the chart before. It's such a waste of paper. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of space. If you're willing to print 520 pages, give those 12 pages to Todd.
Well, I almost wonder, you're right, it takes a lot of space to print the cards. But I'm wondering, I would like to see a book that actually does a better job of illustrating the points with the cards and not the words.
Yeah.
Another way? Instead of look at figure 2-7 on page 79 to understand what I'm writing about here, just explain it that way. In fact, actually, I think Lee Jones' book did that a lot. Very well, too. But, maybe that's a way to get at it. It's still going to take a lot of space, but for some people that just kind of need to wrap their heads around, it does help to see the cards, I think, sometimes, when you're particularly in complex discussions.
Yeah, now what you're getting at, too, is you're getting at, like, a complex situation or a real-life example. What this thing did was, these are hands that are trap hands. Ace, queen, ace, jack.
Oh, okay.
And they just listed a nice little word chart.
It was just pretty pictures.
Yeah. But then you turn the page and it says, here are the trap hands. And then it shows ace, queen as an actual ace and actual queen. And I thought, why'd you do this? You just did it so neatly and it's a nice little chart that I can memorize or whatever. Why did you have to waste all this space? You could save money on printing, or you could have gotten much more content out of Todd or any of these other writers, And then within the Todd chapter, they asked him to talk about the big game at the Bellagio, and he spent like two or three pages on that, and I thought, why? Well, yeah. Anyone who's picking up this book knows about that big game, and he really doesn't expound on it enough where it's like some insight to anything. He doesn't talk about the players and how they play or what their tendencies are or what their favorite games are. There's no real insight on it. It's just, we play at the Bellagio for lots of money, and here are some of the players. I just thought, man... Really, I'm picking up this Power Hold'em strategy book, and I'm finding out about the big game and looking at all these pretty pictures. You know, I don't need that. I need more instruction. And to be fair, the book is worth the price. Especially just Daniel chapter alone is worth the price. So there's no slight on this book. I'm just saying I think we have graduated. And I mentioned this as an example in the write-up as well. You know, on television, they don't talk about how to play Texas Hold'em anymore. They finally got rid of it. Took like 6-7 seasons. But they finally got rid of that stupid little, okay, here's how you play. You get two down. They've gotten rid of all that. Well, they should take a cue from those guys and just get rid of the glossary and get rid of the wasted space. You know, Joe Schmo is not picking up your book and not knowing what the cards look like.
That's very true. They should be picking up Poker for Dummies if they need that basic information.
That stuff's out there, you know, and it's been written a million times in a million other books. Be different. Set yourself apart. You know, talk to an intelligent audience because they're out there.
Well, let me play old devil's advocate here, too. And now, obviously, you've read the book and I haven't yet. I wonder if 520-page book that costs $35 list, whether they're trying to be a... it's tough to get traction in the poker book market now. There's so many books out there.
Right.
And everybody seems to be writing one now, and it's really hard to distinguish yourself. Obviously, having Daniel on the front is a pretty big way of differentiating yourself anyhow, but I would think that if you can mention that, hey, there's get some insights to the big game, regardless of how insightful it really is, plus a glossary, and it's almost like the one book you kind of need, which has kind of been what the Super System had been for a long time.
Well, so... You're advocating for the glossary now?
I'm advocating for understanding why maybe they went that way.
Well,
I agree with you because I've got 47 books on my shelf now, and the next one I need, I don't need 30 pages of glossary or a cursory look at the big game. I could get all that stuff from a different book or in a different way.
Again,
but if I'm out in the market and I don't have 40 books on my shelf and I'm looking for one book to put on my shelf...
Well, see, I think you've answered your question, though. I think that anyone who's going to buy a poker book is going to buy more than one poker book in their career.
And I don't know about that. Yeah. I think you're probably right, but I think when you're starting out...
How many... I don't think
you go to Barnes & Noble and just empty the shelves and take it out of the cart. You spend some time on the big sofa there, as long as there's not somebody there drinking their latte and, you know, reading self-help books. And you read through a bunch and you wait for one that nails it, and then you buy one.
Here's another reason to not put that stuff in there. It's called the intertubes. Okay, the internet, you can easily find a glossary of terms on the internet. You don't need to have a book to do that.
Okay, no, I'm not going to argue. I mean, I think you're right overall. But again, part of the reason that people still buy books and not get everything from the internet is portability and having something, a reference that you can read, whether you're on the beach or in the can or somewhere else where perhaps you do not have the intertubes where you can quickly look up a term.
I just don't think you need... This is a book about advanced strategy, Scott. So you already know these things. This isn't a beginner's book. Although one of the chapters may lead you to believe it's a beginner's book, it's not a beginner's book.
Well, exactly, because you're going to talk a little bit about Evelyn Ng's chapter, which is a beginner strategy. It's probably not.
Also,
but
it's not like you don't know what poker is, beginner. It's like, okay, you know how to play poker, but now you're going to be playing against world-class players. Here's an easy, simple way to play against world-class poker players. It's not... Hey, you've never played poker before. We're going to throw you into a tournament, and here's how you do it.
Yeah, okay.
It's an advanced strategy.
I think you're focusing a little too much on the glossary part and not the big game. What I'm talking is they've added a lot of elements to really make this a book that kind of appeals to a lot of people, knowing that they're going to get people like us to buy it for the Daniel chapters. But then because they've added all this other stuff, you know, the Evelyn chapter on a good beginning strategy, some... big game flavor and you know, then the glossary to throw in that too, it expands the market for the book is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, the only thing that you're talking about, the big game as being a reason to buy it, those conversations and those things that he talked about could have easily been woven into his chapter. You know, he could have used examples from the
excellent
game
and again, not, I'm talking not about a marketing its own strategy chapter. Though
right so, but I you mean, could you're you could still do that from a marketing
yeah,
I mean as a marketing standpoint, I've got the release with the book, and nothing in there talks about the big game.
Okay. All
so,
right.
Really, I just think, to me, it's a waste of space. And if it was that poignant, he would integrate it into his chapter somehow. Like, say, you know, we play in the big game at the Bellagio for 2-4 blinds, and we have a calling station in the game all the time, and I never bluff him. Why? Because he's going to call me. There you go. You've integrated it in there. Now you can say... whatever you want. You know what I'm saying?
See, it's just, I was pushing you to expand your...
Well, again, it was the approach that I think wasted it. It was the approach of, you know, the glossary of terms does not need to be in this book, Scott, no matter what. It's an advanced book. It's not a book for, you know, learn how to play Hold'em. It's advanced. It's power Hold'em strategy, and it's clear that anybody picking up his book already knows poker and already knows, you would know Negreanu from watching him on television. So if you're watching poker on TV, you obviously are a fan of poker and you've played poker, and you're going to pick up a book because he's, you know, you like him, you know. But he's so amazing, you know, at what he does. And small ball, no one's really ever really approached small ball poker. And I think that his chapter was worth the price. And you know what? You didn't even need the other chapters, to be honest. Not that they're not good, but you really didn't even need them. His book would have been still 400 pages, 300 pages, whatever, 250 pages. And it would have been long enough. And it would have been, here's how I play small ball strategy. But, you know, it was kind of like he wanted to write his own kind of, or have his own kind of super system for the next generation, you know, and that's what it was, in a way. But it was all based on Hold'em. There was no different mixed games and things like that. I was just disappointed because, and I mentioned this in the write-up, Todd Brunson's chapter in Super System 2 mm-hmm. really changed my poker life.
It was one of the best chapters ever.
And he's just so smart, and he's so good, and he's real articulate. He writes very well, like, in his card player columns, and he's got a personality about him, and I just felt like he was handcuffed in this book. And I think he even makes reference to it in the book that I don't, you know, because he's coming out with his own book eventually. It's supposed to be coming out soon, but he keeps saying that. So obviously he wanted to hold back a little bit because he's got a, you know, for his own book. But really, I just felt like I was so looking forward to reading his chapter in Daniel's. And not that they weren't good, but like some things just to me, I was like, this didn't, you know, jive. I'm like, why would you write this in this book when you, you know, everyone knows that stuff. You know what I mean? I just felt like it came off as an advanced book. And yet there was still stuff in there that wasn't advanced. Anyway, I really enjoyed it, though. I mean, I clearly enjoyed the read. So.
Yeah, bottom line, it's definitely worth the money, you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of extra stuff, too. And, of course, you know, a book is a good thing is you can flip through and go right to what you want to read.
Right. And
go back and read the other stuff later on.
That's a good thing. It's not like you're reading a novel where you have to, you know what I mean, start from the beginning, go to the end. You can go to whatever chapter you want to read about, and they're all standing on their own, you know? That said, a few of the chapters step on each other's toes, which yeah. I mentioned too, you know, because three of them, I think, are about internet play. And so a lot of the guys talk about the same kind of stuff, and I'm thinking, well, there's a bunch of stuff that you didn't even need to talk about. You could have saved space there, too.
Yeah, but I think you also made a point that perhaps maybe they left that in there for repetition. Yeah. And also maybe they left it in there because they know how people read these type of books. So they read one chapter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's kind of unfortunate for somebody that reads the whole book, but, you know, again, you got the reputation factor.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mentioned that, you know, so that's true. If you do decide to just read, you know, Lindgren's chapter, you know, there were a lot of gems in this book. I mean, there are a lot of good nuggets to grab onto and think about when you're playing. Just for that alone, it's worth a read, I think.
Well, I think the one simple thing, too, that probably a lot of people do, but it's just a nice reminder is from Paul Wasico, where he said that when he puts notes on those online players, he puts a question mark, and which signifies to him it's something that he's picking up, but until he sees it a couple times and establishes a pattern and then takes the question mark off.
To make it more, it's like, you know, Scott Long, colon, likes to bluff with a question mark. And then after he sees you do it two or three times and he knows it's an established characteristic of your play, then he takes it off and puts an exclamation point, likes to bluff, you know, or something. But it's smart. And the other smart thing he said, too, is when you're joining a seat online, a table, and there's two seats open and they're next to each other, take the one on the left. Because you don't know how the player who's going to fill the other seat is going to play, so you want them on the right so you can react to them in case they're a maniac. A lot of like little tidbits like that, things that you can cling to and learn from. And it's not that this stuff is, you know, rocket science, but it's stuff that you may not have thought of that you can hold on to. You know, some good quotes in there, too, like, Daniel had one that said, power is position. When we have position, we need to use it. But when we don't have it, we need to respect it. Now, it sounds simple, but really, if you think about it, it's absolutely 100% true. And it's something you have to respect. You have to remember that. You know, a lot of times you get away from it. You start thinking, oh, I'll play this guy or you know, whatever. And then you lose your position. And it's just a lot of good stuff in here that I liked. You know, I thought it was a pretty good read. So, but, you know, like I said, some of the continuity of it was kind of off for the most part. And I like that he writes in his voice. You know, it's not just some guy instructionally teaching you. It's like, it's his character, you know, it's his personality on top of it. It's a very good read. David Williams had some good stuff in there, but most of his stuff was just giving real life examples of how he was, you know, being a wise guy at the table and got them to think that he was a wise guy and then would cash in later on and got them to commit all their chips on a bad hand, that kind of thing. He had some good stuff. Each writer individually had some very interesting points within their chapters. Overall, like I said, each chapter, they weren't really good enough to stand on their own, but Negreanu's was. Clearly, you got to pick it up for Negreanu's book, or his chapter, I mean.
All right, again, it's $34.95. Power Hold'em Strategy by Daniel Negreanu, Cardoza Publishing.
Nice job.
And then you, if you don't want to chuck out the $35, you can read Chris's review. And then you're going to want to go out and get $35 to get the actual book. So
just go get it.
Just skip the full review and go get the book.
And tell Cardoza that we sent you. Say, Annie Up convinced me to buy this book.
What Rays news from real Rays fans? OutsPerSwing.com. OutsPerSwing.com has interviews, analysis, and all the breaking news for your Tampa Bay Rays. Are you looking for up-to-date news on the most exciting team in baseball? Check out OutsPerSwing.com. That's OutsPerSwing.com.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Back to No Limit Hold'em this week, Chris.
Excellent.
With our hand of the week. Comes to us from John in Lorton, Virginia.
Hey, that's cool.
It's a cool name for a city.
Lorton.
It'd be cool if it was Lorax, Virginia, like in the... Dr. Seuss, but Lorton, we'll do that. But anyhow, so John, he goes by Point Lead, John, online too.
Right.
And forums, he not only did he send in the hand of the week, but he named it.
Ah, cool.
I'm like taking a cue from Columbo. There's not a case of, it's just a name, but you know, personalizing
that's
it a little
funny.
Bit.
All right, so what's the name of the hand? Maybe I'll get some details on it.
Yeah, I know you get excited about the names and try to...
I have to be my own detective.
Exactly. This hand of the week is called The Poseidon Adventure.
Ooh. Does he get turned upside down?
Ooh, I don't know.
Does he hang out with Shelley Winters? Does Ernest Borgnine tell him to swim faster?
Didn't they do a remake?
Remake. Yeah. It's called Poseidon.
Okay, but I didn't see it.
Poseidon Adventure was
it good?
The actual book. No, I didn't see it. I just saw it. I knew it was stupid, but I saw the...
I don't know why they had to remake
it. I saw the original.
Movies.
Shelley Winters has to hold her breath and swim a really long way. And Ernest Borgnine, it was big gap teeth. I don't think anybody listening to the show knows that version of the movie either. I don't know how I know, but I do. I'm not that old.
All right, so here we go. He says he just bubbled out of his monthly... bubbles everywhere.
How did he bubble out? I thought you had all the bubbles.
Well, this hand came in before I
came
bubbled
before
out.
You, yeah. Oh, okay. So there's no more bubbles. So
he
listen, any
Nation,
you're
bubbles.
Never going to bubble out of a tournament again because Scott has them all.
All right, so he just bubbled out of his monthly No Limit Hold'em League tournament and then proceeded promptly to the cash game.
Okay.
It's six-handed, which is good, because he's getting some practice in for apes next week.
Yes.
And it's 50-cent dollar blinds.
Okay.
Just two rounds in, and he gets this hand that comes up in the big blind. He's got $24 in front of him, and most everybody else is about the same. And he, of course, is, you know, this is kind of a league home kind of thing, so he knows these players. He's playing with them a lot, so he's got good reason.
Okay.
Under the gun, limps in for $1. He says this guy literally will play any two cards, call down the river with him. Perfect for Florida poker. And he puts him on one of the 168 starting hands that I'm not holding. And he learned that from our Poker Whiz Wheel sponsor, PokerWhizWheel.com. They're
cool.
Spinning wheel with 169 starting hold'em hands.
Yep.
That helps you out. PokerWhizWheel.com. And our listeners can get 20% off by using the code ANTIUP08.
That's correct. Now, let me ask you, did our hero look at his cards this week?
He did.
Excellent.
Well, I think. I guess we haven't got that far, but I have a feeling that it's going to be that way.
Because I want to use the whiz wheel this week.
Two players fold after that. The button limps in for $1. And he says the button is a solid no-limit hold'em player who's been playing loose aggressive. Laggy.
Laggy.
I don't know why they say laggy. I like laggy better than loose aggressive.
Yeah, laggy.
In position on the button, he could be playing the top 50 to 60% of hands.
Whatever. What's his hand?
Oh, good. All right, so the small blind folds, and we look down at pocket fives.
Okay, I'm happy to see a flop here. I'm not doing anything crazy. And one guy's solid, the other guy's, you know, the other guy calls you down. So what am I going to do? Go crazy with pocket fives? I'm happy to see a flop. Let's check. What does the Whiz Wheel say to do?
It's a blue chip hand, of course, because it's a pair.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because of blinds. I don't know how it blinds. That's early position, but you're last lacked.
Yeah, you're still early position.
But, so. You know, it's a call fold, and we're obviously not going to fold.
Right. So we're just checking blind. Yep. I'm happy to check, seeing that three-handed. I'd like more people in the flop.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you want to hit your set. That's the best you can do here.
But I'll take the $3 pot in there and hopefully hit something here.
We'll
see what happens.
You know, I'm going to agree with you.
Oh, forget it. Show's over.
Yeah, well, I know.
Show's over. We're not finishing the hand of the week. Screw it.
It was even worse as John agreed with us, too. So.
Oh, man.
We have no...
There's no reason to ask for our advice for doing the same stuff.
Right now.
Right now.
We'll see.
Yeah, that's the beauty of poker.
Every hand is a long hand.
Every card's a new situation.
He says, being out of position, he is happy to see a cheap flop and simply check his option here. Exactly what we said. Mm-hmm. Pot is 350. Flop comes out 975 rainbow.
Excellent.
Pretty much the best we could ask for here.
Yeah.
We've got some straight cards out there, but they don't seem to be very likely straight cards.
6-8 is kind of an unlikely hand. You never know. It could be 6-8 suited from the laggy.
And rainbow, we love.
Well, we love the rainbow.
And we're first to act. So, Chris, what are you going to do here?
Let's see. We got a calling station and a loose aggressive guy. I'll bet. I don't think it'll disguise definitely the strength of our hands. No one would think we'd bet with a set there. But if you have a guy who calls you down no matter what, I'll bet.
You're going to bet
$2.
$2? You want to go pot?
No, I would throw a couple bucks out there. I'm not worried about getting drawn out yet.
Okay.
It's rainbow, and really, if the guy has 6-8, more power to him, but I still have 10 outs after the turn. So, yeah, I'm going to bet $2 here. That's how I would play this hand, I think. I think I would bet out $2, unless I knew one of these guys were aggressive, were to the point where I knew they would bet. Then I might not. But I'm pretty sure this other guy, you say, is a calling station, so I'm betting out.
Okay. All right, I'm going to do the same. I probably would bet a little bit more, but $2 is probably better.
Okay.
Of course, our hero says he's flopped the set, and he was hoping for it, bottom set. But he says, again, it's the best thing you can do with 5-5.
Yeah.
He doesn't figure either of his opponents to hold 8-6, so he leads out for $3.
Yeah, nothing wrong with betting pot, especially because there is a draw out there. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that either. Again, you know, I'm not a genius. I'm just telling you what I would do.
Just a poker podcaster.
Yeah, just a podcaster. So, and a publisher. but yeah, no, I don't fault the $3 bet, but I would definitely bet out. I think sets are more concealed when you bet out.
Yeah, I think you need to here. Okay, so both players call.
Both call. Yep. See, now it's a little scary just because it seems like somebody has like a draw and then someone has... You know, like an ace nine or something, you know, so you don't know what you're up against.
Yeah, I guess, it's really weird that there's two calls, particularly from the end of the gun. I mean, because it's such a weird flop that no one would, I don't know. You got a blind betting out that apparently hit something, you would think.
Yeah, that's kind of
so
weird.
So you want to kind of define the hand.
I thought for sure someone would fold there.
Yeah, either fold or raise here. I don't think
I don't know what they could have. Right now, so we've got really no information other than you think at least one of them's drawing. And maybe someone has two overs, and they might want to try to steal it later.
Aha! So we've come to the part of the hand where we deviate here.
Okay.
So our hero says that he's bought some information here.
Yeah, I don't think we did. Says he's thinking Not a lot, at least.
Says he's thinking the under gun has the gut shot 8 or 6, and we'll call him down to the end.
Okay.
The button probably has an over pair or two over cards. If he hit this flop at all, he would have raised.
I
might think it's the opposite, actually.
If he had an over pair, I don't think the pre-flop betting would have gone that way either, though. So if he had pocket 10s or higher,
he probably would have raised
pre-flop to get isolated against a calling station and lose the blinds with an ace rag. And he may have two overs. He may have two overs, like I said earlier, but I don't think he has an over pair. I think he would have done something.
But two overs, I think you would be raising here just to find out where you are, right? I guess he put out a pretty big bet, but...
Well, if somebody bet out into me and I get a caller and I have just two over cards, I wouldn't raise.
Or not two overs, but I mean a higher pair.
That's what I said. That's why I don't think he has an over pair.
Right.
I don't think he has an over pair even from the beginning. But if he did, he would have raised earlier, and he would definitely raise here. So by calling, it seems like he has over cards or maybe like ace nine or something, you know, something like that.
Okay. Pot's 1250. The turn card is another 9.
Okay, so we boated. I mean, we have the underboat, which is not...
the underboat.
Which is not really good, but I'm not going anywhere. I only have $25 anyway, and the pot's 12. My instinct is to bet around 8 to 10. That's my instinct right now, to still bet. Because even though I've made a boat, you know, they may have the 9, which is why they called. So we're hoping to get somebody with ace 9 to call or something like that. So I think I'd bet here. I mean, I could be crafty and check, but I could be given a free card to somebody who has a 9.
Yeah, might as well. I mean, you led the action. I mean, that's kind of a situation where you're hoping somebody's going to raise you, trying to be crazy and trying to push you off of it.
Yeah, I'd bet out. I'd bet, like I said, between 8 and 10, probably. I wouldn't bet the whole pot. It's too much.
Okay. He says, if his read is right, the under the gun is drawing dead. He thought that his hand is pretty well disguised. He's betting for value here and growing the pot some, so he bets $5.
That's not enough. I don't feel like it's enough, because I just don't. I don't think you're going to get enough information for that. If somebody has a 9 for $5, they're going to call and try to trap you, and they may fill up on the river. So I don't think that's enough, but we'll see.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you.
Okay.
I might go 10 here.
Yeah, I'm going to go probably 10. 8 to 10.
All right. Both opponents call.
Both call.
Yep.
Good God. Somebody has pocket sevens. You watch.
All right, so our hero is still happy with his bet because he thinks now that the under gun is going to call him down, and the button probably thinks his two pair are good.
So it's like $27 in the pot.
Yeah, $27.50 now. We have 15 left behind. River card is another 9.
I was going to say, please don't be another 9. please don't be another 9.
Water rushes in as my boat suddenly turns upside down. Hence the Poseidon Adventure name.
You know, and I know what the other guy has now. I just know it.
All right.
Somebody has 9-10. I could just feel it. You know, my birthday was this week, yesterday, 9-10.
That's right.
A couple days ago. And so I feel like maybe that's why you picked this hand, because 9-10 was the key hand. So I have a feeling somebody had 9-10
really hard into this stuff
and made a bigger boat than us.
All right. So he says, based on his reads, he's either way ahead or way behind. Shoving the last 15 in barely changes the pot odds here, and the only like our callers are if I'm beat. So he's going to check.
All right, so what? Basically, there's 3 9s on board, right?
Three nines on board.
So somebody's got to have like quad 9.
So you two will be checking.
I'd be checking, yeah.
Okay.
And then if it's a reasonable bet, I'd call it. But it seems like if you played the hand over in your head, a guy on the button who just called an under-the-gun caller, and he's loose aggressive, 9-10 is the kind of hand he'd play. Or, you know, ace 9. So I'm going with that. Okay. So I'm checking, and then if I have a good read on this guy, I'm folding, actually. Because any 7 beats me now, too.
Yeah.
So
I'm checking. We really got screwed that last card.
Yeah, we got really screwed. And I was going to say it before you said it. I was going to say, don't tell me a 9's coming. I was going to say it, and a 9 came, so that's brutal.
All right, so the under the gun actually is the one that leads out for $5 into this $27.50 pot.
So he has a 7.
And the button says all in.
Yeah. One has a 7, one has a 9, which explains why the guy just called along, because he thought his 9-7s were good, and the other guy was slow playing. That's what it is. Some guy's got like 7-6, and the other guy's got 9-10. That's my guess. And we're screwed. We better fold.
All right. So our hero says the betting all in raise gave him all the information he needs and easily mucks his hand. Yeah. Congratulations. Smart. Very well played.
Very smart.
The end of the gun shows.
I guessed 7-6, so I don't know.
It shows queen 7. Queen, of course, he called.
Queen 7?
Queen 7.
He limped under the gun with queen 7. I knew he had a 7, though. He had to have a 7. Oh, my God. That's horrible. Send him the whiz wheel. Teach him how to play.
Well, okay. Yeah, he's going to need it because he didn't win the hand, because the button rolls over pocket 10s.
Oh, pocket 10s. That shocks me.
See, now, I think that's really weird. Again, that's what I was saying.
That's shocking.
I guess he's loose aggressive, so. But still, I would think on a button, if you've got that reputation, you'd want to raise on the button, because then people don't give you the credit for having pocket 10s.
That's shocking that he had 10s. I really thought that he would have either raised pre-flop or raised after the flop.
And then after the flop, too,
bet after the flop, yeah.
And you got an overpair to that weird board.
Wow, that's shocking. I really didn't think he had 10s. That is shocking. He played it wrong, too. They all played it wrong.
They all played it wrong.
Every one of them played wrong there. They all need a wheel.
Oh, but at least our hero got out with his $15.
Yeah, very,
not only
very
that,
good.
But he gets a poker whiz wheel.
Yeah, so
he actually
made money.
Address, so
he actually made money on the hand now.
Exactly.
Because the whiz wheel is worth more than what he lost.
So, John, we'll be happy to send you that Poker Whiz Wheel from PokerWhizWheel.com.
Excellent. Scott, another good show. And I want to thank you for falling asleep at the computer and giving me something to make fun of you about.
My wife gets back tonight, though, so I will be back on my normal schedule. So if you see me online, do not think that I will be falling asleep.
You will be
tournament.
Awake.
Yes.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We will see you at the table. AnnieUp is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. I'll take chess. So you're going to have to do something stupid here.
All right, Ray.
I'm ready if you don't say, all right, Chris.